friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Let's see where we start here. If I tell you that my guest's mother was from Labrashida in County Clare, and if you have been listening to this program over the decades, by now you've guessed that must have something to do with my very good lifetime friend, indeed, John O'Neill, band leader, and because we've had in earnest and in jest many references to Labrashida, and indeed to Milltown Malbay and the Clare area. Let me welcome author, novelist, Stephen Talty, who indeed was born in Buffalo, New York, and who has had more than one success in the New York Times bestseller list of books. His most recent, Black Irish, this being a novel. Stephen Talty, you're very welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your own background. Parents, immigrants from Clare, and as we said, Milltown Malbay, your father.
Right, that's right.
And again, your mother from Labrashida.
Yes, my parents grew up in West Clare. They didn't know each other back then. And like many people, they didn't have really economic prospects in Ireland, so they came over in the 50s, met in Buffalo. My father was a construction worker, and my mom worked at the local hospital. So, yeah, there was a pretty strong Irish community there. And I grew up swimming at the Irish Center and playing basketball and things like that. And most of the kids I knew had names like, you know, Reardon or O'Connell or things like that. So it was sort of a little Ireland there in South Buffalo when I was growing up.
Yeah, and again, your uncles, John and, of course, Jimmy, and a couple of other of the brothers wound up in New York. But what brought your parents to Buffalo? What was the big draw? What was the magnet?
Really, it was my father's work. He was actually on the St. Lawrence Seaway drilling oil wells and working on a boat there. And Buffalo was sort of a stronghold back then. It's really not now. But maybe he just didn't want to do what everyone else did and move to New York and settle in Queens or something like that. But he had a great job in Buffalo, so that's where they settled. And like I said, you know, they were just really looking for a, sort of a foothold in America, and that's where they found it.
Now, you went to Bishop Tubman High School.
That's right.
And then onwards to Amherst.
That's right, up in Massachusetts.
Up in Massachusetts. So you were getting closer to the city, but indeed now living in Long Island, when did you recognize that you had a talent for writing, number one, and what took you into that career?
Actually, I've been writing since I was like in fifth grade, and I remember a teacher back then would let us write stories, and she'd read one in class, and she chose mine sort of again and again, and I was able to sort of entertain the kids. So I guess that little bit of attention got me sort of intrigued by the whole career.
The famous compositions.
That's right, exactly. And if you could make people laugh, you know, they'd choose your essay the next week. So, but I was writing in college, and actually I came out, my first job was at Doubleday Books here in New York, and I started writing for Irish America magazine.
Right.
I did something on F. Scott Fitzgerald and his whole Irish background. And then I went to the Miami Herald and learned to sort of be a reporter. I was on the news desk there and did crime reporting and just learned the basics, you know, how to write a simple English sentence. And after that, I'd always wanted to go back to see Ireland, so I moved to Dublin in the late 80s, and I worked in a fish and chip shop and wrote for magazines. I wrote for In Dublin and the Irish Times, and just sort of got my feet wet over there. So it's, writing is just something I've always loved. I think the Irish do have a gift for it. We don't really have the painting gene, but I think we do have the writing gene.
Yeah. You also, of course, have written extensively for New York Times Magazine, GQ, Playboy, Irish Times, Chicago Review, and a lot of other publications. As a at what stage, I think you're a freelancer, and at what stage do you say, okay, I'm going to continue to do this, but I want to be an author. I want to write a book. I want to head into this area, which really doesn't, which requires your full attention. It really doesn't
exactly
leave you as the freelancer that indeed is very interesting. And obviously, you not only did very well, but you obviously enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I grew up sort of worshiping people like F. Scott Fitzgerald and people who'd written great books, and it was always in the back of my mind to write one, but I never really had the subject. So I was working at Details Magazine. I was a film editor there, which is a men's magazine here in New York. And I wanted to write a book on sort of the intersection of black and white culture throughout America. I grew up not only with Irish music, but with hip-hop.
Yeah.
There were so many books on sort of the clash between black and white culture that I wanted to write one about sort of how they'd sort of nourished each other. So I wrote a book called Mulatto America, and that looked at sports and religion and just all the sort of intersections between black and white culture and music, things like that. And after that, that's really what just got me started. And my next book was a New York Times bestseller on Henry Morgan, who was a Welsh pirate. You've probably heard of the rum, Captain Morgan's rum. And so after that, really, I started to write about individual figures in history who were sort of battling against the odds. I mean, Henry Morgan was fighting the Spanish Empire down in South America. And then I did a book on the Dalai Lama and his escape from Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
He was escaping the communist armies back there. So I'm just attracted
that
to these.
That was back, that was 59-ish.
Exactly, yeah. 1959. He was, he was going to be captured by the communists, so.
Back in 1959.
That's right. He was under threat from the communists.
Mm-hmm.
They were really trying to crush his religion, Buddhism. And so he made the sort of thrilling escape across the Himalayas. And he was a young man back then, not very well known. And so I wrote about his escape. I actually traveled to Tibet, met his brother, met the Dalai Lama briefly, and just learned about sort of this adventure that changed history, because once he came out into the Western world, you know, he became the figure that we know today, this really immense spiritual figure. And so I'm just attracted to these stories of, you know, individual figures who are trying to do something that seems impossible. I did a book about, my latest book is Agent Garbo. It's about this very ordinary Spanish guy who, at the beginning of World War II, volunteered to be a double agent for the Allies. And he basically tricked Hitler and Himmler and all of them into believing that D-Day was coming at Calais and not in Normandy. So, you know, without him, D-Day would have been a completely different thing. And probably it could very well have failed. So I'm just attracted to really these men who made a difference through their own courage and through their own, you know, daring, really.
Yeah, but obviously what you are doing, and when you get to the level of being on a New York Times bestseller list, you at one point or another, you're part historian.
Right.
So the day had to come that when writing a novel that had to be kind of very conscious and say, listen, I have much more leeway now than I used to have, right?
Yeah, actually, I'd wanted to write one back 25 years ago. I tried to write one when I was at the Miami Herald, because I was a crime reporter back there.
Right.
I was writing about murders and cops and, you know, everything like that. So I thought that material would give me, you know, the stuff of a great crime novel. But it really took almost 25 years to sort of, you know, to sort of filter through my mind or sort of turn into a story that I could use. So When I started to think back, I used a lot of the things I'd learned from the police and from covering real crimes, but I said it in the place probably I knew best, which was my hometown of Buffalo.
Yes. Now, the title of the book conjures up curiosity at best, Black Irish. First of all, how did you come up with the title? And I'm sure you must have thought about those who would be looking in a bookstore and seeing Black Irish and saying, what the heck is this?
Right. Well, the hero of the novel is a detective, and she's sort of an outsider. She's been adopted by a great Irish detective in South Buffalo, where I grew up.
Mm-hmm. Back home.
Yes, exactly. But she's not really quite of the neighborhood because nobody knows, you know, she was an orphan. Nobody knows really where she came from. So she's Irish, but there's something mysterious and sort of maybe off about her background. So I'd grown up with the term Black Irish, so it always meant to me something, you know, an Irish person who had sort of something, I don't know, sinister or mysterious about them, you know, in their background. So that title just came to me immediately, really before I wrote the book.
Yeah.
And it sort of guided how I thought about her.
And it has little to do with the Afro-American / Irish, which, you know, in story and sometimes in jokes, wind up with the implication.
Right.
You know, that it was using a West of Ireland expression, a mixed marriage, you know, which could be Catholic and Protestant, it could have been anything. It was like just getting out of the immediate nest.
Right. No, it was just, I wanted something that denoted the fact that she was, you know, of the neighborhood and of the culture, but sort of outside it as well. Mm. And that expression seemed to sort of capture it for me, so...
As a novice, heavy-duty researcher, and as a crime reporter, is it a culture shock when you are now writing a novel? Your head has to be filled over 25 years, you know, of absolutely real-life, accurate reporting. Is that a what do you draw from that 25 years?
Well, actually, it's just a huge relief to go from nonfiction. Sometimes when I do a nonfiction book, you know, I might spend a year researching or 2 years, and I'll end up with maybe 500 pages of notes. So to sort of just go from my own imagination was like being let out of jail in a certain way, because it was just total freedom.
And do you separate yourself then from the hard line, real life coverage, particularly when you've had a lot of success in that area?
Well, you know, my aim was for someone who was from Buffalo to say, you know, this person knows Buffalo. I start with something that's true and then I embellish on top of it and then make it more dramatic, more vivid. But a lot of the details I worked to get really right, especially about the town itself, and a lot of sort of the cop lingo came from listening to the police scanner from hours on end down at the Miami Herald. So I try to give it everything a basis in fact, but then sort of to let my imagination run wild.
Yeah, and that you've done well in this book, because somewhere along the way you must have decided that this was sounding too good and was going to be a puff piece. And when you do delve into, you know, into the background and into the generations of motivation, and it gets pretty deep.
Yeah,
you're running out of good guys.
It's true. Like a crime novel, almost by definition, has to be sort of gritty and dark. So I actually warned my family. I said, you know, it's kind of tough stuff, but. Yeah. I actually based it, one of the things in the book is has to do with IRA fugitives. And when I was growing up as a boy, I remember that a couple of IRA guys were caught coming across the Peace Bridge from Canada to Buffalo. They were being smuggled in, you know, obviously on the run, looking for somewhere to sort of disappear into. And Buffalo had a lot of, you know, Native Irish and Irish Americans, so it was a perfect place for that. So that
it would also have though a lot of other immigrants who maybe particularly if they were running away from some of their own troubles and their own multi-ethnic backgrounds.
Right.
It is said anyway that a lot of them like came to Canada and looked across at the United States, you know, and then took the chance.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I guess another attraction was that the police force and the city government when I was growing up was sort of controlled by Irish Americans, and Jimmy Griffin was the mayor when I was growing up, and so that sort of entranceway to another country if things got too hot was another probably attraction to anyone looking to disappear.
Living in a city like Buffalo, living on the border, you obviously had local law enforcement, but then you would have a border law control tying, you know, two countries there. Was there camaraderie with the local cops and border patrol, those who were?
Yeah, and when I was growing up, it was to go to Canada was like going around the block. All you needed to do, you didn't even need a passport. That really all changed after 9/11.
Right.
But it was like Canadians and Buffalonians were like, you know, kind of brothers. We just, they were always coming over shopping in Buffalo. We were always going over to gamble in the casinos up there or to go see Niagara Falls or things like that. So whenever someone came from Ireland to see Buffalo, we'd always take them across to see Niagara Falls. So we thought nothing of crossing the border, but ever since 9/11, that's really changed.
You are you're working on a new the new book. Is it a follow-up to Black Irish?
It is, yeah. This is sort of a detective series featuring the same detective, Abby Kearney. So it's set in Buffalo. Hopefully all of them will be. But she's going to be sort of the main character, the thread that sort of knits all the different books together.
Yeah. This Abby Kearney, is that a composite of in your own experience, your own mind? Is this a composite of actually a lot of real live people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something of me in there. There's probably something of my wife, who's a very smart, inquisitive person, and just people I knew growing up. You know, South Buffalo was a really colorful place. I mean, I met some of the most interesting people I've ever come across in high school and just on the corners down there. So, yeah, absolutely. There's something really unique about the Buffalo sense of humor and the Buffalo view of the world. You know, it's a friendly place, but, you know, they weren't born yesterday. So I try to sort of put that into the character.
How do you react to critics and when you have, for instance, Publishers Weekly says a memorable story of betrayal and vengeance, from that to Dallas Morning News, you know, that's on Empire Blue Water, a ripping arm. How do you react to some of them and say, I don't know, I don't think that's what I wrote about.
Right.
Is there a sense that sometimes having put a lot of work into a particular book that there are aspects and reactions that you didn't expect in the first place?
Yeah, a lot of times.
Is that good or?
I think it can be good and bad. I mean, I've had books that have been absolutely trashed and other times have gotten 5 out of 5 stars, but people never really read the book that you've written in your own mind. I mean, they always choose details or they always sort of see meanings that you never anticipated. And I think that's sort of, when you give the book up, you have to be ready for that. I mean, when you send it out into the market and sort of everyone reads their own sort of subtext into it.
If,
yeah.
if somebody comes from a background, not necessarily in a novel, it's something akin to your own. Is there does a fiction novelist, is that a breed of of reader?
Mm-hmm.
Is there?
Well, you know, some of the most interesting reactions I've gotten are from people from South Boston, which is a very similar culture.
Right.
Very sort of insular and suspicious of outsiders. And I had a couple guys write me just through my website and saying, you know, I was reading about Buffalo, but this could have been about the block that I grew up on in Boston.
Right.
And I sort of take that as a compliment to know that, and there are things that are very specific to Buffalo in the book, but there are other things that are very universal, especially about the Irish, really, I think, wherever they settle. So, I took that as a vote of confidence in the accuracy of the book.
Is there a tendency when you are writing a book like this, and when you are crossing over into the dark side, is there a tendency to pull back, to withhold? Do you think of a reader who might say, geez, don't tell me he's going down this road?
Yeah, I actually, my wife asked me, are you going to use a pseudonym for this one? Because especially for a first-time writer, you're trying to prove yourself and you want to go as far as you can. So sometimes you go overboard. So, you know, there's some grim violence in this and,
yeah.
I mean, based on actual murders that I've covered, but I didn't want to pull back. I didn't want to sort of cover things up. I mean, I'm very proud of where I came from, and I hope that comes through in the book. I have a lot of affection for Buffalo and for Irish-American culture and things like that. And, you know, the people I grew up with, they can sort of take this kind of, tough book, I think. So, especially when you're writing...
It's not a travel fare thee well kind of book anyway. This is a novel, and it is one that well reviewed.
Yeah, I'm
and
I'm
it's not straight, you know, you've mentioned it is. It's a great profile of, say, South Buffalo, and for that matter, South Boston, but it also, for a great number of people, brings, you know, a lot of us into areas that we've heard of, but we're really not that
right
familiar with, and the fact that there's nowhere in here and there's nowhere in your writing that says everything was bad and then it got worse.
Right.
I mean, it is complimentary to Buffalo and where you grew up.
Yeah. I mean, I do remember the reaction to a book like Angela's Ashes, and
yeah,
my parents were not really fans of that book. I mean, it was a very sort of brutal book, but, you know, obviously a memoir is different than fiction. But, I think the overall reaction to books like that were like, this is genuine, this is authentic, and I hope that this sort of struck the same chord with people that there's no reason to hide, you know, to cover things up and to hide
yeah.
what things are actually like, so long as you sort of mix sort of your love and your hate for the place that you came from. I think it's an honest reaction.
Great. And you still have, of course, relatives, and you still have family up in Buffalo?
Yeah, my parents are still there. I have a brother and a sister who are still there. I go back all the time. You know, I'm a huge monster fan of the Buffalo Bills and Buffalo sports. So, you know, I'm still really connected to the place, and I hope in some way I put Buffalo on the map as far as crime fiction anyway.
Black Irish, it's a novel, and and the author, Stephen Talty, is with us. How, I know it's available in so many bookstores, everything from Barnes & Noble to bookstores all over, Amazon, but you actually have your own website, which covers not only this book, but all of your other books.
Right, yeah, it's got some of my journalism on there as well. So it's stephantalty.com, S-T-E-P-H-A-N-T-A-L-T-Y.com. And be happy to have anyone visit it.
All right. Is it, you know how provided you don't bring it up, I won't. But when I meet your Uncle John O'Neill, I will not say that you're referring to yourself as Talty, because I was always of the opinion that you came from a family of Talty. But anyway, that's okay. That's just as an aside.
You know, back in Ireland, I hear Talty a lot more. Something changed on the flight over, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Stephen, again, that's STEPHAN, Talty, TALTY.com. Good luck.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.
Great.
Good. I think we covered.